Hi, I'm James Connor, and welcome to Inspired by Their Stories, the Pulte Family Charitable Foundation's monthly podcast. Hello, and welcome to our fifth episode of Inspired by Their Stories. In just a few moments, we'll be joined by nonprofit founder and author Vicky Sokolic. But before we jump into that conversation, I want to take a moment to congratulate our Humanitarian Hotels team. This August, one of our hotels, the St. John's Resort in Plymouth, Michigan, hosted the 2025 LIV Golf Team Championship. This event saw the largest fan turnout in the event's history, with more than 40,000 people showing up across three unforgettable days. And a worldwide television audience was introduced to the beauty of the St. John's Resort and the Cardinal, our championship golf course. The excitement built to a dramatic finish, a two-hole playoff featuring teams captained by two of golf's biggest stars, Jon Rahm and Bryson DeChambeau. Ultimately, it was won by Rahm and his partner, Tyrrell Hatton, capping off an amazing event. And of course, as with everything that we do at our humanitarian hotels, 100% of the net profits from this event will go to support local and global charities. Exciting things are always happening here at the Foundation, but today what I am most excited about is our guest. This conversation has actually been a few months in the making, and the stars have finally aligned. So I am so pleased to welcome Vicky Sokolic to our podcast. Vicky is the founder and CEO of Starting Right Now, an organization dedicated to helping homeless and unaccompanied youth in the Tampa Bay area with housing, mentoring, and more. In addition to that, Vicky is also the author of If You See Them, Young, Unhoused, and Alone in America. Vicky, thank you so much for joining me today.
Yeah, thank you for having me. This is such an honor.
Yeah. So why don't we start by having you introduce yourself and tell us about who you are and what you do.
So I am Vicky Sokolic. And as you said, I'm the founder and CEO of Starting Right Now. And we help a very niche population of kids that are actually coded under the federal law as an unaccompanied homeless youth. That distinction means that they are not living with their parent or guardian, and they're not eligible for foster care because they left home versus being taken from their home. But they have left due to very unstable situations or horrific things happening inside the home. And we're pretty much the only nonprofit in the area that helps minors in this situation that are not in foster care.
Yeah. So how large is this population? You know, what does it look like in the Tampa Bay area or Florida?
So Florida is actually one of the highest numbers throughout the U.S. for this particular population. But as a whole, to put it like into like real facts, there's 1.7 million of these kids across our country that are literally living alone on the streets, trying to find someone to be able to just crash at their home or pulling car handles and doors to just have a place to sleep for the night, or doing what we call survival sex, where they're trading their bodies specifically for somewhere to just lay their head at night. I can tell you that that number is actually erroneous because these kids hide. And so when we are going in and we're interviewing students in our area, they have not been coded yet. And so that number is probably double. And last year, there was a 10% rise in that number. And as programs get defunded or as people start losing their jobs, that number just increases because families just cannot keep themselves together. It's so sad. But the saddest stat is that almost 100% of the girls in our program have been raped in their home, which is why they leave. And we know that 35% of the boys have been raped as well, but boys are not as likely to come forward and say because they feel like they should have protected themselves, their kids. And so it actually just boggles my mind how this can be so prevalent in homes and how these kids just have no help until they find us.
Yeah, those are some awful numbers. And I can't imagine how traumatic that experience is for those youth. You were talking about how prevalent it is, but I think a lot of people are kind of unaware that this is even really happening around them. And in fact, I was thinking about how your book is called If You See Them. Can you tell us about when this first came on your radar? When did you first see them?
So as a family, we were philanthropic and helping people. But my son actually came home the second day of his senior year in high school and started telling me about a girl who stood up in class and was saying goodbye to everybody because she was going to drop out. And she was explaining that her mom was moving in with another man and that she did not feel safe with this man. And so she was going to go work full time and live with her boyfriend. And honestly, at the time, I just said, oh, that's so sad. But the next day, my son came home from school and said, Mom, what did you work out for Amanda? And Amanda and her boyfriend, David, were actually my first introduction to this population. And at the time, I didn't even know they had a distinction. But I just knew that here's this 17-year-old that was wicked smart and was not going to be able to get her high school diploma and propel anywhere because she was going to be alone and working, you know, at a fast food restaurant the rest of her life. And so we did, as a family, we went into action and helped her. And really, that became my focus of, okay, are there other kids out there that are in this same situation? And as I came to find out, there is not a school anywhere. I don't care if you are in the richest neighborhood that does not have some of these kids that are either doubled up with other families not realizing or sleeping on floors or they're in motels near that school. And so we were just helping. That started in like 2000. And then in 2007, Mayor Arroyo called me and said, I'm hearing what you're doing with all these homeless students. Would you come in and meet with me, and challenged me to actually do it citywide. And honestly, I laughed because I had no clue what I was doing. But since then, we've actually helped more than 400 kids. Those kids are now back in our community as teachers and social workers and nurses and doctors and EMTs and paramedics. I mean, you name it, they're doing it. We even have a firefighter. And we've been able to change 10 laws at the state level because when I started working with this, there were no protections for these kids. And so I was able to actually have the kids speak. So we use their voice and explain like what they needed in order to actually be successful and not be dead ended. I'm excited to say that since my book launched, we actually have our first national bill in session that is the first law that we passed in Florida, which was for kids to get their birth certificates and Social Security cards, which you need just to even work. And so I'm excited because hopefully that will pass through and then we'll just keep churning other bills out.
As a former lobbyist, I know how important it is to have advocates with that lived experience can be.
No question. And, you know, for me to stand up, I always feel like I'm the Lorax for the trees, right? But I try really hard not to do that because I don't have that lived experience. And when you look at the student that is really trying to improve their life, how would you not want to help them? They will actually not be a burden to society. They're going to be taxpayers and giving back. And I can tell you that our teachers, our nurses, our social workers are amazing at their job because of their lived experience.
Yeah. We were talking about how prevalent this is. I was wondering if you could help our audience understand, are there particular signs or indicators that might help you identify if a teen is in need of help, if they're unhoused or if they need some assistance?
Yeah, I would say that we definitely like have a list of, you know, these are things to look for in the school. Like a student who is constantly getting referrals for bad behavior, being sent out of a classroom, It's interesting because I just gave a tour to our social workers, and I said, unfortunately, you know, a teacher has, you know, 30 kids in their classroom and this one person is being disruptive. And so they're sent out of the class. And instead of someone saying, is everything okay? Or how can I help you? It's always, why are you acting like this? Well, there's a reason. Kids don't just act out for no reason. And so that's one thing. We see a lot of referrals. We see a lot of skipping classes, a lot of kids who are so exhausted that when they come to school, they put their head down. They're not participatory at all. They're exhausted mentally and physically. Kids who constantly like are wearing two or three clothes, like rotating. Those are like telltale signs, or kids who are perpetually late to school, like they get there, but they're missing first and second period. I mean, we've had kids that literally walk 4 to 6 miles every day to get to school. You know, they're not there when the bell rings, but they make it. But no one stops to ask, like, why are you consistently late every day? There's a reason. There are so many signs. And unfortunately, I think our schools are so burdened with, right now, especially, the mental health crisis is so real, that I just think people aren't asking the right questions, not because they don't want to help. I just think time.
Like you said, the schools are dealing with so many things all at the same time. It's a very human thing to look at the symptoms rather than the underlying cause.
Right. And, you know, we had a student years ago who had been expelled 22 times in a quarter. And it was constantly for fighting. And he's 6'4" and 300 pounds. So people are afraid of him, right? And, you know, it turns out, I mean, he's angry. Of course, you know, he literally has nowhere to sleep every night. And he's hungry. And the minute he got into our program, he never had a referral again. And it's, you know, it's like, I can't even imagine as a 15, 16, 17, even 18-year-old not knowing where I'm laying my head, you know, or how I'm getting food. I mean, especially, you know, one of the kids once stood up and she was doing a speech for me at a middle school private school. And she stood up and she said, you know, what do y'all do? Tell me what y'all do during breaks. You know, and the kids were like, we go skiing, we go to the beach, you know, blah, blah, blah. And she said, what if breaks meant hunger? Like, her only option for food was school. So whenever school, you know, had a break, she was starving. And you just, like, you wrap your head around that and you think, how can that be?
Yeah, I mean, it's really easy to hear those stories and be compelled to do something. And I mean, that seems like a big part of your origin story.
No question. I mean, really, it was, you know, I always say, like, I was an ostrich before. You know, I had my head in the sand. I was doing my thing. But the minute I realized I could no longer just bury my head, because I could not imagine my own two kids not having a place to call home. It just, you know, and an advocate for them. I mean, we have so many kids that enter our program that are not only so behind in credits just from, you know, moving. They've been in 17 high schools and they just lose credits every time they move. But also, they have a disability that has never, you know, been acknowledged. And we are able to get them the testing and get them, like, everything in place so that they can actually be successful in school. And, you know, we've had so many kids who come in and they're like, I'm just dumb. It's like, no, you're not. You just have a different learning style. And they're so successful once they come in. So, and our program is hard. I mean, really hard, accountable from the minute you walk in the door for everything that you do, from, you know, before you leave for school, from making your bed and having your room clean, and you have a chore at night, and there's curfew, and you have to go to life skill classes every Monday and Wednesday, and you have tutoring Tuesday and Thursday, and you have to work on the weekends. I mean, it's hard. But I can tell you that the kids rise to the occasion. And because for the first time, they have belonging with a group of people who truly understand their plight and are all chasing similar goals to be better, they just blossom.
Yeah, let's talk about the program, because I've been fortunate enough to visit you all twice now. But for the uninitiated, can you kind of give an overview of what Starting Right Now does?
Yes. So as I described the student who, you know, was angry, if all Starting Right Now did was place the kids in our safe housing and give them food, they would walk out the same way that they walked in, angry, not trusting, and really probably would not be employable because they would say something inappropriate to their manager or supervisor. And so we have developed our own curriculum that really builds trust and shows the kids that they can trust again, but also works through all of their mental health issues that are related to being an unaccompanied homeless youth. There is so much shame. And our program really helps them rid their shame. So they go through everything from public speaking, where they're telling their story and they learn to tell it with pride. They're resilient instead of shameful. And they go through emotional intelligence and learn healthy coping strategies. And we have a series of classes where they learn their triggers and how to avoid being triggered, what to do when that happens. Because if you don't know what your trigger is, you don't even realize you're doing it. They go through etiquette classes. They go to every type of ethnic restaurant so that when they go to their next school, they know what these foods are. I mean, it's literally everything that you can think of that you would learn in a home that your parents were doing. But the other thing is we do a very intense financial literacy component where not only do we have banks come in and teach about checking and savings and 401k plans and all that, but each student has to have a job because we do it one-on-one with earned income. And so you get a job, your very first job, we help you open a checking and savings account. You have to budget based on our budgeting page, how you're going to spend your money. 30% has to go in savings. You cannot touch it. And the rest, you budget. And what we have found, for one, is that our high school kids leave with about $5,000 to $8,000 in savings, which is huge. Yeah. But the bigger thing is that we did an alumni survey in 2020 in the height of the pandemic. It was already planned, so we've sweat with it. But 93% of our alumni still followed the SRN budgeting and had more than 6 months in savings. And that is above average, like the national average for anyone. And it's really about just building this healthy habit. And they're all in careers with benefits. And so the program works. It truly ends the cycle of generational poverty.
I think when we talk about the program, I think about the importance of just knowing that these possibilities exist and having somebody that believes in you and having an advocate for you to give you access to that and the confidence to pursue that. I remember when I first met you, we talked a lot about mentoring. Can you talk a little bit about the mentoring component of the program?
Yeah, so our mentoring component is very robust. Mentors apply online. They go through a board interview to make sure that they're actually mentoring for the right reason, and mostly that they have the time commitment that we demand. Because when you're mentoring for us, you go through a four-hour training, and then you have to text your student every single day just as a check-in. You have to meet with your student once a week to go do an experience. You have to go through two trainings that are about adverse childhood experiences. And then every Monday, you get dinged on your phone with like a two-minute survey of what did you do with your student? Is there anything that we need to look for? Is your student responsive? And, you know, that was the other thing that was so amazing about the survey is that more than 90% of the kids spanning all the way back to 2008 still are in touch with their mentor from SRN. And I'll tell you, you know, about 4 years ago, I got an invitation in the mail, and it was for one of our earlier kids who had gotten married, was having her first baby. And the baby shower was being thrown by her SRN mentor, you know, and this is, you know, a span of 10 years later. And so, you know, you end up having this one person who really becomes your go-to, and it's one-on-one. And we do not match by next in line. We match by personality likes and dislikes. And it's the smallest things that really build trust. We had a Marine come home one day to do a talk for us. And I asked him before he spoke, I said, Philip, what was the greatest thing you did with your mentor? And his mentor literally took him to do crazy things. And he said, chop onions. And I was like, what? What does that mean? And he said it was the second time that he went to their house, and they had two little girls, and everyone was in the kitchen. They were making dinner. Everybody had a duty, and they asked him to chop onions. And he said it was the first time he felt like he belonged. And it's like, you know, the smallest little thing is really what they remember.
Yeah, that's sometimes you think it's like, oh, it's going to be this big adventure, but the small human touch points, I mean, that's really a great sport.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's like, oh my God, you know, I immediately called his mentor and told him like, you have to realize what you did, but it's just amazing. And our kids are now, our alumni are now, you know, married with, you know, two people in the house that are educated and they're having kids, and to see them with their kids, it's incredible.
So you've been doing this work for quite some time. How have the youth that you've served changed? How has the issue itself changed since you first started?
Well, I would say that when I first started, there wasn't even conversation about it. So that's one of the biggest things. And there's still not enough conversation about it, or without being, you know, politically incorrect, I would say that some of the conversation about it doesn't make sense. Some of the things that they're putting in place, but at least people recognize this population exists, which is amazing. I would say that, you know, when a student finally gets trust, like gains trust, there's like a physical transformation that happens, where they stand taller. The girls are just more beautiful. The confidence builds. And once that happens and you start laying out, like, here's your options. You can do the military. About 1% of our kids do that. You can do vocational training. About 11% of our kids do that. And that's actually growing. Or you can go to higher education and go, you know, to college and do anything you want. And I think the biggest change that I'm seeing over the years is that more of our kids are going into grad schools. We have students who've gotten their PhD. We have a student that now has an MD. She's in her residency to become a pediatric surgeon. She wants to serve underserved kids because she never had a pediatrician. And the biggest thing that I think I'm seeing is that the kids want to give back. They're going in careers where they're giving back to others. And I think it's because they're recognizing they had help.
Yeah. I was going to ask you about what you think SRN's biggest accomplishment has been over all this time, but it sounds like there's been a lot of different things. You've listed a lot of really impressive statistics. You've shared a lot of stories. You've talked about the policy and changes in laws in the state of Florida and now nationally. But is there one really big impact that you're particularly proud of?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because like when you say one big impact, I don't think one would happen without another. I think it's all like a domino. And I think that, you know, the biggest, the greatest thing that I have heard about SRN actually comes from our mayor, who was our former chief of police. And she's constantly talking about our program to everybody. And she said SRN is the best prevention program she's ever seen because our kids do not end up in the jail pipeline. And they would if we wouldn't have intersected at the right time.
Yeah.
And I think to me, that's the biggest thing because we're actually helping the community be stronger and safer.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. Now, I also wanted to take some time and ask you a few questions about your book, because to me, the idea of sitting down and writing out a story like that is quite an undertaking.
This is the hardest thing I've ever done in my life.
When did you first get that crazy idea to sit down and write a book?
So in 2019, I was honored as a CNN hero. And the producer said, "When is your book coming out?" And I was like, "I have no plans for a book." But then, and I hate to admit this because it tells my age, but then I ended up winning an AARP award. And they asked me when my book was coming out. And so I thought, well, I mean, maybe I should think about this. And because SRN was at the point to where we were talking about expanding, which we're actually in the middle of doing right now through an affiliate program, I felt like we couldn't expand unless the general population, and especially the politicians in DC, understood who these kids were. Because if we're going to expand to go state by state and change laws would be forever. And so really that's when I decided. And it's funny because I wrote the proposal for the book and then you send it off and, you know, people told me, you know, you won't hear for 6 months. And then the first week I had 3 offers. So it's really crazy. But the thing that I'm most proud about in the book is the kids' stories, how raw and real they are. And they were so gracious about sharing, and what they wrote is so beautiful. And that really made the book.
Yeah, I think my favorite part about the book is how those stories are interwoven with your own story. And I was going to ask you, what was it like to work with the youth or the former participants of the program and really solicit those stories and kind of get them to share their stories?
Well, you know, the funny part is that there's so many things that they wrote that I did not know, which, you know, I thought I knew everything about them. But the funny part is Amanda, who was the first student that wrote in the book, I sent her section that I had written about her and said, you know, please tell me if I have anything wrong. Like, I want this to be accurate. And she read it and she called me and she's like, Miss Vicky, I need the rest. I have to know what happened. And I'm like, what do you mean? It's your story. You know what happened. It was amazing working with them. And I got everyone together one day, and they all got to read their sections that I wrote about them and read about each other. And it was just such a beautiful moment. And now we are meeting every other month on Zoom so they can hear, like, okay, what's happened with the book next? And they're just so excited about how they've been able to play a part to expand this conversation.
So I have two questions to finish up here. So the first is, if people want to get more involved, if they want to find the book, I want you to plug the book and plug SRN. Tell us how our audience can find you.
Okay, well, if you want to go to SRN, it's startingrightnow.org. And the book is actually on the website to be sold, but you can also just go to Amazon, to your local bookstore. It's everywhere. And it is called If You See Them. And, you know, people think, what I have heard is that people think that they're going to pick up this book and it's going to be, you know, this like boring, you know, it's not. I mean, the kids' stories in it are just incredible. And it really opens your eyes to the plight of these kids and how hard it is for them to navigate life alone. They just can't. They're kids.
Yeah, it was such a engaging read. And I think it is all the stories. It's the, you finish the book and you feel like you really know each of these people really intimately and the stories and the struggles that they went through.
Yeah. And they're real. I mean, you know, I'm so proud of them because to be able to sit down and write that takes a lot of courage, yeah. A lot of courage, because now your book is on this national, you know, your story's on this national market. It's daunting, but they were just amazing and so excited to be. I mean, what's crazy is that as I was calling kids, because I was looking for themes to be able to point out like what happens, they were all, yes, yes, yes. Tell me what to do. And I love that. And I love that my publisher did not change their stories. And that, you know, I was so grateful about.
I think the book raises so much awareness. I learned so much, even being a little familiar from the outset, but I still found myself just really learning a lot and having my eyes open to something that I didn't even realize was happening around me.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing. You know, it's funny, like I look back and I remember in my high school, a student living with another family, and like it didn't obviously dawn on me at the time, but you know, she was an unaccompanied youth and it was prevalent back then. And it's only gotten more prevalent. So, and the issue is that as a society, if we do not help these kids at the front end, we will be paying for them at the back end, because the kids will survive. And they will survive in ways that are not good for communities. So I'm excited that we're expanding and that we'll be able to help more youth get to goals that they didn't even realize they could reach.
Yeah, that's a perfect segue to my last question. You mentioned the affiliate program. I was wondering if you could fill us in on what your hope is for starting right now next, like what's on the horizon?
Yeah, so it's exciting. Right after the book came out, we had our first what we call affiliate seminar, and we weren't even sure that any counties would come, and we were limiting it to 10, and then all of a sudden we had 12, and so 12 counties came, saw our program, really got to understand what we do, and they went back to their community with a roadmap of how to actually replicate our program in their community. And we have several LOIs that are in the works, and I can't like say what they are, but
sure, sure.
It's exciting in that in the next year, there will probably be three counties that will actually be adopting our program. And we're calling our program, that version of it, We See Them. And so I'm really excited because counties realize that there's an issue finally in Florida. Like that has definitely been on the forefront. And so there's three counties here that are ready to roll, and I'm excited. And we're going to launch them before we do our next phase of the next affiliate seminar. But people are amazed when they come through at how holistic our program is. I mean, we literally, there's no stone unturned for these kids.
Yeah, it's really impressive what has been accomplished and how the program really does account for everything that these kids need, really. And mm-hmm. It really gives them a fighting chance to improve their future.
Yeah, no question. And I mean, it's like, I always say, you tell kids to dream, like, you know, what do you want to be? What's your dream? It's like, if you've never been exposed to anything, how do you know? And the most unique part of our program is that there is no aging out. We're family. And so we do care management through their post-secondary goals to make sure that they actually get into their career. So we can tell you where a student starts and where a student stops, which is very unusual. Yeah. And I'm going to say one more thing for you. In 2020, 1 in 10 of our alumni owned their home.
Wow, that's a great stat.
Yes. And, you know, when you think about not having a home and then owning one, it's incredible.
Yeah, what a full circle moment that must be for those.
Oh, my gosh. Yes, incredible.
Yeah. Well, on behalf of the foundation, I know we're really grateful for what you do and what Starting Right Now does for the Tampa Bay community. And it is going to be really exciting to see how the affiliate program progresses and just the greater impact that can be had.
Yeah, I'm excited and I'll keep you abreast. And I'm so thankful for what the foundation does for us. I mean, being privately funded, your funding is incredible. And this podcast, I mean, it's just being able to show, you know, other people that these kids exist is incredible. So I so appreciate all your time.
No, it is we who thank you. And we're just grateful that you were able to join us and share your story with us. And I hope other people will be inspired to take some action.
Well, thanks. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Vicky. There is so much power in storytelling. I want to thank Vicky not only for sharing her story with us, but also for helping to raise the voices of the youth that have come through Starting Right Now. We are grateful for all that Starting Right Now does and for the comprehensive way that they are transforming lives every day. Next month, we will have another change maker join us to share her story. Olivia Malerwa was born and raised in Uganda, but her journey took her first to Rwanda, where she worked at the Ministry of Justice, and eventually to Mission One, where she now serves as president. We will hear about her story and about Mission One, an organization that works to equip and train the global church to help transform communities in hard places. The foundation is so fortunate to partner with many like Vicky and Olivia, people who are committed to doing what they can to encourage and help others. That's a wrap on this episode of Inspired by Their Stories from the Pulte Family Charitable Foundation. If you're feeling inspired, please share this episode with a friend. And until next time, be good to each other and inspire others to do the same.